KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. In his new science fiction thriller, The Creator, writer-director Gareth Edwards explores whether artificial intelligence has the capacity to feel emotions. John David Washington plays Joshua, an ex-Special Forces agent who finds himself on the run with a robot, or Sim as he calls it, as in simulation. The Sim appears to be a child, and while her intelligence may be artificial, at first she acts a lot like a bulky human child who's been warned not to trust strangers.
Come on, little Sim, get in the car. Hey, it'll be fun. Like cartoons, it'll be fun, okay? It's like a game. Hide and seek. I'll drive fast. All right, let's go. Right? Come on. This is hella fun. This is, why don't you want to get in the car? It's a lot of fun. Get in the damn car.
Let's go back to The Creator. That is a movie that was done by Regency, but I guess marketed by Disney, right? Did they change the name? Because I think initially the name of the movie was True Love, which, having seen the movie, you understand why. But on the other hand, I've seen where you've understood, at least, whether it was whoever's idea this was, that people might think it's a rom-com. Although if they saw the materials, I don't think they would necessarily think that.
Yeah, I mean, you essentially just summed it up, which was the movie was always, like, when I wrote it, it was called True Love, for reasons that make sense after you've seen it. I mean, and we kept experiencing this issue where when people went in before they had seen it, they didn't understand the title and their preconceptions about the film were completely off.
Right.
And when they came out, they said, oh, it totally makes sense. But our problem is we have to get people in, you know, into the cinema. And essentially they do all this marketing research and they mocked up posters with all, you know, lots of options on it. Mm-hmm. And people were just not wanting to see that film called True Love, even though it, once you've seen the movie, it makes a lot of sense. And so the strongest idea, you know, that we had was the creator, without spoiling it for people. What's funny is Oren, the DOP on the movie, got a tattoo of True Love. And so I had to break it to him that it's not called that anymore. But he's proud of that. He's like, that makes it even better story when people ask me. So
now I'm going to ask you a question that's very out of character for me because it's a technical filmmaking kind of question, which I admit up front, I don't know anything about. But you were using this Sony camera and kind of guerrilla filmmaking techniques with this. I read 80 locations around the world, and this camera enabled you to be very nimble in a way that would save a ton of money, I think, and not have to re-establish sets with new lighting and so forth and so on. Maybe you're going to explain this better than me.
Oh, I don't know if I will actually, but yeah, so it was essentially, it doesn't really matter what the camera was called. It will change next year to a new camera. That'll be the best one for this, but it was an FX3, a Sony FX3. And that is the camera that, you know, to be all honest, you can go into Best Buy and buy that camera. If you look at the prosumer market, is growing and becoming better at an incredible pace. So if you imagine, like, so when we did Rogue One, we had drones on that shoot and they were like mini helicopters, and one of them crashed. It was a little bit dangerous, and so we was told we can't use any more drones on the movie. Up to a couple of years later, and there's these drones that can fit in your pocket and shoot at 4K cinema resolution, and like the technology has just come on leaps and bounds. It's pretty incredible. And there's innovation happening in the, what you call the prosumer, like the sort of professional, but like consumer professional market, because they've got nothing to lose. And so they're taking these big swings technologically at camera equipment because they're trying to reach the, you know, hit the guys off the top. So for instance, our camera, I don't know if you remember, but when there was film in a camera, you normally would buy it with, it would be called 100 ISO or maybe 200 ISO, depending on if it was sunny outside. If you were inside a house and it was dark, you might go up to 800 ISO. Like that was like, oh, I'm buying a film for like very dark conditions. This camera can film at 12,800 ISO. So it can film under moonlight and you can still see an image. And so it's incredibly sensitive. And you can't get that in the higher end cameras. Like this is just something the prosumer cameras are doing, because they're just trying, you know, to like disrupt the playing field a little bit. And so this amazing camera came out that does this. And as soon as you have a very sensitive camera like that, suddenly lots of other interesting things can happen. Like normally on a movie set, you have to have these giant lights that are like giant trucks, you know, generating electricity for these, and there are massive cranes and stuff everywhere. And if you want to move the camera to the right, you have to move all the trucks. So filming becomes this quite laborious thing of like, you point in one direction, shoot for half an hour or so, and then you wait 20 minutes as everyone moves the lights and you shoot in another direction. And that's kind of typical filmmaking. And with these new cameras, and you're all familiar with it at home and even in your iPhone, LED lights, like battery operated LED lights, have become really bright, you know, and need very little electricity or power. And so what you have now is film lights that are just on small batteries, and they're so lightweight that you can hold them like all day long. And so we were like, well, instead of having constantly have stands everywhere, why don't we have, just like you have the sound guy holding a big long pole with a microphone on it, why can't we have like the lighting guys holding poles with lights on them? And then as the camera moves around, they quickly move around. And so we tried it and it worked really well. And so we would do takes, you know, normally you do a little take and then you say cut, but we would do like 25 minute takes where we would play through the scene like 10 times. And the actors had all this freedom to go anywhere they wanted. And I would move with the camera and the lights would move really quickly. And, you know, I didn't want to put marks on the ground and say, you walk here and you say this line. I wanted it to be a bit free for all, a bit more sort of like a documentary at times, you know.
This movie is obviously a science fiction movie and an action movie and a lot of effects. I read that you had said that there were quite a number of movies that inspired you for this movie, the creator. Blade Runner, I got, but you also said Paper Moon and Rain Man. And I have to ask you, I sort of thought, okay, I'm thinking about both of those movies and I'm not quite seeing it. Is it because in Rain Man, the character of Raymond is the other outsider? Is that what made you say that?
Yeah, it's essentially, they're a bit different, but say Rain Man is the journey of, well, they actually happen to be related brothers, right? But the journey of two people who are kind of polar opposites. And one of them is obviously, you know, autistic. So he's lacking some of the qualities that Tom Cruise has, you know.
Yeah, a lot of people lack the qualities that Tom Cruise has, but go on.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, and so there's like this weird, interesting, like it's a very extreme dynamic that's really interesting where there's a lot of friction, a lot of antagonism from Tom Cruise to his, to like Dustin Hoffman for most of that film. And, but there's these, basically they go from, and I can't get into this in too much detail because I don't want to spoil what happens
yes,
in the film.
Yes, don't spoil. No spoilers.
But essentially, the story beats, you know, there's a lot to learn from that kind of movie in terms of two people in a relationship on a journey, a road movie of sorts, where they're at polar opposites and want totally separate things. And Paper Moon, they never actually say it out loud, but there's a moment where it's clear, but they never fully go there, where it's father-child sort of dynamic. And again, like total, like it's the last person in the world he wants to be with is this little girl. It's kind of, and then he just, it's like they've got to deal with each other because they both, the one thing they have in common is they've got to get to this place together. Mm-hmm. Those sort of road movie, odd couple, you know, dynamics were definitely, I do feel is appropriate for our film in a way without getting into too much detail.
Well, now I feel kind of dumb that I didn't see it myself because now that you say it, it makes perfect sense. Gareth Edwards produced, wrote, and directed The Creator. The film is now in theaters everywhere. You're here, I should note, as a director and not as a writer, right?
Of course, yeah. As a director.
Thanks for doing the show.
Thank you.
And that's The Business. Joshua Farnham produced and edited today's program with help this week from John Meek, who mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW shows on kcrw.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.